Hello and welcome to AEW Live Boxing Day. Brighton won, Arsenal won. I guess everyone got a present today, not the ones we wanted. As you can see, we're all very festive. Well, some of us anyway. Mine's branded, but you can't see. This is a lovely range from Jason. I have with me today, all the way from Canada, Dom. Hello, Dom.
Hello, John. Merry Christmas. I would be wearing some merch, except it hasn't arrived yet. I think Canada Post are on strike. But apparently it is on the way.
That's fair enough, mate. I think it's partway there. I know it's in the country at least.
I think OG might have it up his sleeve. Maybe he's thieved it.
Yeah, so we're slowly getting there with everyone. Merry Christmas to you and Merry Christmas to everyone in our chat as well and who's listening. We also have with us Danny. If you can't tell, if you're not watching live, I suggest you just, even if you don't want to like watch the whole show and you just want to listen to it, just come on just to see Danny's hello. Say hello, Danny.
Hello, you bastards.
Danny, do you want to describe what you look like right now for people who aren't watching?
Fucking mess. I've got my Christmas tree in the background, my Christmas fire on the other side. I've got a Rudolph hat that Sean's mum bought me. I've got Christmas baubles in my 3-inch long beard. I've got Christmas fairy lights in my beard. I've got a really big snood and a scarf that Sean's mum knitted me. That is lovely and nice and warm. So I look like a right twat.
Yeah, it's a pretty good description actually.
He wrote Rudolph on my head. He is northern, and he, if you've got any questions for Rudolph, he will answer them in a northern. Don't actually forget that.
There you go, chat box. That's your challenge. Ask Rudolph plenty of questions at the end. I'll just say very quickly in the chat box, hello to Archie Standerman, Anti35, Loki, Gunner93, Josh Gunner Forever, Daryl Kane, J Rob, Alonzo Spencer, No Sleep, Standerman, MJL, C Law AFC, Hassan Ramzan, Lossless, Christian Anderson. Oh, who have I missed? Anyone? I'll probably miss some more people. Hello, 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 all. Hello, everyone listening. I hope you've all had a lovely Christmas, or I don't know what other celebrations and stuff that you've been doing. So we are here to talk Brighton Arsenal, and we'll jump straight in to the lineups. Just before I do, a big thank you to J Rob with a donation there. Hello, guys. Danny has made up for the match with his decorations. There you go. Thanks, J Rob. Cheers. Really appreciate that. Dom, coming to you first on the lineup. I'm not sure Emery had much of a choice, really, because there's not really anyone else fit. Mesut Ozil playing again, two games in a row, first time for a while, three in midfield, four at the back again, Koscielny starting. There wasn't anyone else he could pick, I guess.
Not really. The one thing I think that was a little bit a little bit disappointing for me was I liked the setup, I liked the formation. I'm just not sure having the three midfielders that we did was necessary. I know Torreira was one yellow card away from a suspension, but it just seemed very defensive to have those three in particular sitting in midfield with only Mesut Ozil ahead of them. I think it would have been a good game for Aaron Ramsey to be stuck into that midfield three just to help out going forward a bit, because we did see how Brighton set up, which was basically just to sit back deep and defend and then hit us on a counter-attack. So I'm sure we'll get onto this a little bit later, but it does seem to be a little bit strange that it doesn't matter who's in midfield. The counter-attacks still seem to be very easy for the opposition. And I'm not sure if that's something that's going to get worked on slowly but surely, or if it's a personnel issue, but that was the one aspect of what I saw with the lineup looking defensive. Well, not defensive, but just looking a little bit more secure in midfield, and yet it didn't really seem to matter.
Yeah. I think the only team that hasn't scored against us so far this season is Huddersfield. It's not a great record to have. Danny, before I come to you quickly on the lineup, very quickly, a thank you for Chris Lodato as well with a $10 donation just for Danny. I'm not sure whether he's donating because he's impressed or he's just questioning your sanity.
That's because I followed him on Instagram last night. Well, I thought I've been in the WhatsApp group with him for ages, so there's usually pictures of him and his lovely dog. You'd love his dog, John. I'll send you a picture of it later.
Oh, lovely stuff. I do like
it. Tell what dog you've got, damn, Chris. Share it with
people. So, Danny, same sort of take as Dom on the lineup. Were you happy with it? going into the game. I didn't know a ton about Brighton coming into it, so I asked our resident Brighton boy, Josh, about them, and he basically said, if Dunk isn't playing with Duffy, then their defence is gettable. So I thought it was quite positive playing two up front.
Yeah, it was weird to look at it because I'm not sure. Before, about 2 months ago, I'd have said Emery is always going to play four at the back. So when we're looking at this formation, I'm not sure if it's his plan to play three at the back or whether he has to play three at the back, because what have we got? We've got one central or two central defenders started the game. So I'm looking at it after the substitutions. So if we, would you two say that his general plan is to play four at the back?
I think if everyone's available, he'd look to play four at the back more often.
Good. Right. So from that point, if you go and have a look at our starting... I've clicked on the wrong game. Bloody hell. Hold on a sec. I clicked on the last game.
I think the games where we played three at the back, and obviously we did for a bit today, has been down to available personnel or... Yeah.
That's the point I was
going to make. Yeah, certain people not fitting quite into the system that he wants to play.
Yeah, when this page loads, right? So we kind of started off with four at the back when we started the game. And so you look at the right back, not first choice. Koscielny, probably not first choice anymore. The Greek lad, maybe. Leno, possibly. Kolasinac, not first choice left back. So straight away out of that lot, you've only got two first choice out of our back five. And then I suppose you could say Torreira and Xhaka are our first choice. Ozil definitely isn't. And what we do with the front two, I don't know. So I say nearly half the team are not first choice. So then straight away you're at a loss. And then when your captain has to go off, and then that moves the team around even more. And then it's just really hard to try and get any kind of continuity going, because you don't know who's going to be playing in what position, who's going to be trying to cover for somebody else, who's going to be moved into the wrong position. And then you're playing against a team like Brighton that are playing nine at the back and a goalkeeper, 10. So it's really hard with the formation. And I tweeted before the game started, I went to the physioroom.com and tweeted that our first choice right back is out. Our first two choices left backs were out. But then it turns out Kolasinac was fit. And then so many of our players. So it's just so hard for anybody to get any kind of grasp of what really is Emery's best team. And tonight, there certainly wasn't the best team. But again, we weren't really allowed to play football. But I feel a bit sorry for Brighton, because late on, if that had been, we were Brighton fans, we'd be going, we should have won that game.
Yeah, we all come on to them and how they played, obviously. Just before we jump into the game, I actually thought when I saw the lineup that maybe we were going to play three at the back, and I thought Xhaka was actually in the back three. I wasn't quite sure how we were going to line up, because like Dom, I didn't think we needed three in midfield the way we did, but that's the way you went with it. And I think everyone agrees, you know, we know how many injuries we've got. It's very slim pickings in terms of who you can play right now. One thing quickly, actually, in the end, it didn't matter and Torreira didn't get the booking, but were you happy to see him being picked on, because he was one booking off from missing the Liverpool game, obviously, if he picked up a yellow today?
I was a little surprised. I just want to touch on something on that. Actually, someone in the chat box, I'm not going to say your last name because I'm going to butcher it, but Mayank asked, what was with Torreira playing so high up? Was it to do with his booking? I'm not sure. I did notice that, though. I did notice that he wasn't ever sitting the deepest of all of our midfielders. And I was going to sort of make a comment on that at some stage today, where I didn't feel that he was actually that useful today. And I don't know if that was the case, that he was told to go up a little bit higher and maybe try and press and turn the ball over higher up the pitch. But for whatever reason, he didn't do that. In terms of being effective, that's where he was playing, but he wasn't really that influential. I think we're used to seeing him be the deepest midfielder and breaking up play in those counter attacks that would have been probably a lot more useful for him to be in that position. So if you're gonna take a guy like that and you know what his skill set is, and then you ask him to do something different, would it not be better off just playing someone else like a Ramsey in that position, who could have probably done that same role, being a little bit more offensive and sort of not taken away from his game, if that makes sense?
Yeah, because, I mean, at times, especially in the first half before the Ozil sub, it was we were basically kind of playing a diamond, really, at least when we had the ball. And it was Xhaka who was the deepest of those three. Guendouzi was definitely on the left-hand side and Torreira more to the right. So I understood it. And Torreira does know that system, but in that system, wherever he's played it, he's always been the deepest, at least he was at Sampdoria. So, yeah, interesting things, but as you say, it's I still think Emery's trying to work it out, and there's so many injuries and stuff at the moment that it's so difficult to try and pick a consistent team. So we'll jump into the game. Before I do, as always, Yvonne, I don't know why you keep doing it. Thank you very much. We always appreciate your donations. Yvonne says, roll on January and incoming signings. I think there's quite a few people who agree. But yeah, big, big thanks to Yvonne. You don't have to keep giving money, Yvonne. We do appreciate it.
Money on when I watch Tom's pod and the same old Arsenal pod, I always chuck them a couple of quid.
Yeah,
I don't use ABW money either. I use my own.
Oh,
I know.
That's nice to know. You're not stealing from us or the listeners, Danny. So we started off, I thought, okay, actually, and I think this game was a sort of a flip of what we've seen most of the season, in that the first half was actually better than the second. We had a really early chance, Dom. Guendouzi playing a really nice forward ball. And that, I think that was the good side of his game today, because we'll talk about individuals later. But he played some really nice sort of balls over the top, and Aubameyang got clean through and just tried to chip the keeper, Ryan, who pulled off a nice little save. And it wasn't the first one he would... it wasn't the only one, sorry, he'd make today. But Aubameyang was certainly stretching him in the first half.
Yeah, normally I like to cheer for the Aussies, but he was a little bit too good today, wasn't he, the goalkeeper? It was very frustrating. But yeah, he had to give us something going forward, because out of that three-man midfield, Xhaka wasn't really venturing forward too much, and he is, you know, a very good passer of the ball and can be quite creative. Guendouzi's sort of been a little bit hit and miss in the last few weeks, I would say. But you're right, he was kind of at least offering a little bit of something going forward, because this is one of those games, and you know, I'm sure Mesut Ozil is going to come up a lot throughout the day, because he does, but he's never going to be as influential in a game like today where you have a team that isn't giving space. You know, the areas that Ozil likes to take up were just clogged up with Brighton defenders, or even midfielders, and everybody that they could get behind the ball. And it worked. It was a good tactic. You know, you're going to, you know, they obviously set up to counter what they know we're good at doing. And without someone like a Hector Bellerin on the wing or the right wing back position getting forward and creating a little bit more overlap, it was probably pretty easy for them today, you know, not having to worry about us getting in behind. So those little cheeky long balls over the top obviously are a good way to bypass all of that congestion. So it was good to see. It nearly happened a couple of times as well, didn't it? Aubameyang got through again from a Torreira pass later, which we'll get onto. But that one, yeah, I think you're right. We did start really well. Definitely on top for the most part of that game. And I guess just a little frustrating that we couldn't capitalize a little bit more with that dominance. You know, inevitably we're going to get tired later in games this part of the season. So I think the biggest frustration was that we weren't too up by halftime.
Yeah, because we certainly created enough chances. It didn't take us too long, Danny, to get the goal. It was just 7 minutes in, Aubameyang with the goal. But, you know, it's a nice tidy finish from him, what you'd expect. But it's all about Lacazette and his footwork. And I don't know, how many players did he sit down, Brighton players, in defence? There was about five or six around him, and he just wriggled through. He's amazing, isn't he?
Well, the thing I'd go back to with that was the original ball from Guendouzi. He was magnificent in the first half with a few of those. I mean, when you're at his age, you're that sort of stuff. You're going to be trying all kinds of things before you find out what you're best at doing. And that ball was almost, it was in our own half, and in our own half of the edge of the centre circle, as he lobbed the ball. It almost looked like the perfect pass out to the far right. And then, as you said, then one of our players come in with it, and then the Lacazette got it, and he realised that probably best not to shoot, did a little shimmy, been watching Strictly Come Dancing, and Craig Revel-Hallward would have given him a 10 out of 10 for that, because it was brilliant. Laid it off to Aubameyang, and then he placed it into the net, which is his 13th goal of the season, top goal scorer in the Premier League. And in his Arsenal time in the Premier League now, he's got 23 goals in 32 games, which makes him our 91st all-time top goal scorer.
It's kind of nuts, his figures. I'm not sure, I can't remember what the numbers are now. They'll have obviously changed after today. But I think in terms of goals per minute, when both of them are on the pitch together, I think it's something ridiculous, like a goal every 30-something minutes. Just because they've played so little much time together. But they do seem to have a real understanding, don't they?
But very rarely. I mean, we've now played in half a season. We've played everybody once, I think. And how many times out of those 18 games? Well, I don't think they've played together that often. It's not like in the old days where you'd have Bergkamp and Henry, where they would play every game together, or when it would be Bergkamp and Ian Wright, they'd play every game. These two, half a season, they've probably played maybe 8 or 9, 10, 12 games together. But how many of those games, when they've played together, have they actually played together? Only a handful. And wait for those two click perfectly, because I know at one point it was Aubameyang would be wide left and then Lacazette up front, and then he went through a phase of leaving Aubameyang on the bench and bringing him on, and then he went through a phase of playing Aubameyang up front on his own and then bringing Lacazette on, and today he took him off. So I'd like to know how many minutes this season in the Premier League they've actually spent playing together.
I think there's a reason for that, though, Danny. You have to manage the player's fitness. You have to be careful that if one of them goes down, then you're heavily reliant on a sole striker, essentially, because we don't really have, with Danny Welbeck being out now, we don't really have anybody that's kind of, you know, a usable backup that you're going to have any kind of confidence in. Like Eddie Nketiah, for a young kid, obviously he's got some potential, but he's not somebody that you want leading the line going through a period like this. So you've got to be careful in terms of playing them together all the time and burning them both out or having them both get injured. So I think there's more behind the scenes in terms of those decisions than what we see. And as fans, obviously you want to see both of them play and score, and, you know, it's great when they're clicking together, but you've got to be a little bit careful at the same time too. It's a long season.
Yeah. But, you know, it was a good goal, and I thought, just in the terms of the sort of chances we created, because we had that free in midfield and they're not the most creative kind of players, they weren't really getting forward that much. It was going to be a lot today, down to Lacazette and Aubameyang finding a bit of space one for the other. And in the end, it was, you know, Lacazette's just, his footwork and his upper body strength is absolutely brilliant, and his awareness as well in the box. I should just say, on that goal, there is a hint of possibly being offside. This first phase, second phase thing is very weird, because I think just before that, Balogun is clearing the ball in like their corner flag area, and Lacazette had gone towards the ball. If he touched the ball, he would have been offside, and the flag had gone up, but they'd allow play to go on. But he ends up actually blocking the clearance, and then we go on to score from that. So I have no idea whether it's actually an offside or not, because I don't know what point phase one turns to phase two.
And we get a replay and we've no idea. So we're going to figure that out with no replay.
Oh, I haven't got a clue. And they were talking on the coverage I was watching, they were talking about at halftime, and they were saying, I genuinely don't know. Got no idea. So I don't know. Maybe someone watch Match of the Day later, or I don't know, if there's a ref account on Twitter or something, someone will find out. Danny, after that, Murray, I was about to say Bill Murray. Could you imagine if Bill Murray played for Brighton? That'd be amazing.
Imagine if this Murray played the was in Scrooge and Ghostbusters. That'd be more disappointing.
So Glenn Murray goes for on goal, kicks the ball out of Leno's hands. It does eventually go over the line. It's sort of scrambled, very scrappy. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, that's a goal when it's allowed. Ends up being called back for a foul. Agree with that, because Leno had his both hands on the ball for, it wasn't very long, but according to the rules, if both hands are on the ball, then the keeper is deemed to be in control of it, even if it's slightly moving on the floor.
Yeah, that Murray bloke reminds me a little bit of the players back in the black and white days, where you could actually push the goalkeeper into net when he's holding the ball and it would count as a goal, because he's got the hairstyle of someone who played football in the 40s. Yeah, so definitely. I mean, I was looking at it, went pen. I wrote down pen, question mark. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, 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 no. Murray kicked the ball out of Leno's hands, which he definitely did. And you can't do that. And it's good that the referee saw it. I think the linesman might have had a little view of it as well. And yet again, this is something that we are definitely going to be better off next season, because sly things like that, even the commentators were saying the ball definitely went over the line. Well, it doesn't matter, because he fouled the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Laying on his side like this, I'm laying on my side, people. And has the ball in his hands like this, and then he can't come in and kick the ball, push the ball out of his hands, and then afterwards it looked like an almost foul on the goalie when he went. Murray went over the top of Leno as well. I thought that looked a bit dangerous, but it's a rough, tough time when you're playing against people old school. He's not really a striker, is he? He's a forward. He's done really well beginning part of this season. He's quite an old school type of player, where he's all elbows and stuff like that. He's not ever going to do anybody on pace, but what he will do is get stuck in. And so that was a good test for Leno, and yeah. But it does worry you that if the referee wouldn't have seen the fact that he booted it out of his hands, that could have gone down as a goal, because it definitely went over the line.
Yeah, I think Murray is entitled to go for the ball there, because it is loose as he goes in for it. and Leno just gets there quicker. So I don't think there's any. I saw some people saying, oh, it's like violent and intent and whatever. The thing is, you have to play for the ball, and that's part of being a goalkeeper. You have to be brave with those kind of things. So I think Murray, in the end, he wasn't arguing. He was more arguing, you know, it's fair for me to challenge there. And I don't think he was complaining about Leno, and Leno got up and seemed to be fine with it, and they sort of pat each other on the back. So, yeah, I thought it was the right decision in the end. But it is a funny one, that just how much the game has changed, that if that's even 10 years ago, that's probably allowed.
But you think at the point of which of time when Murray decided, I'm going to go for that ball, Leno probably didn't have a good grasp of it. And there's probably a split second between, I'm going to go for that, and then Leno got the ball. So, yeah, he's just doing his job. They both did their job. So, ref saw it.
Not long after that, Dom, you mentioned it earlier, Torreira puts Aubameyang through again. This time, near enough one-on-one with Ryan. A good save by the keeper, but do you think Aubameyang should be putting that away there? I'd at least expect him to. I know he got it on target, but it was pretty close to the keeper, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a little bit. I think with the angle, if he went too much wider, it might not have ended up going in. But I mean, there's plenty of other places I guess he could have tried to poke that in, but I don't know. It was funny. I was listening to something earlier in the week. I can't remember where it was, but someone just made a mention of, you know, Aubameyang's a bit of a strange one because, as well as he's doing, you know, he's up the top of the goal scoring charts in the Premier League.
Yeah.
It does still feel like there's an extra layer to him that we're not getting yet. You know, little things like that where he could have gone on to score two first half goals and, you know, or even a hat trick with the little chip over the top that got saved. And it just seems like there's a few of these types of chances that are not going in for him at the moment, for whatever reason, that you would expect him to score. And then he goes and scores a more difficult chance, for the first goal. So a little bit frustrating, to be honest. And I'm sure we'll get onto the whole substitution sort of situation in the second half. But
yeah.
What did you think of his performance in the first half overall?
I thought he was good. The channels he ran, I thought his movement was much better today. Last time I was on here with Josh, and he was sort of criticising Aubameyang's movement, which I think was fair, especially when you compare it to Lacazette's. I don't think it's as good. It's not as intelligent. But he is a different style of player, so he's going to make different runs because, you know, he's got a different skill set. But, yeah, he's... It's frustrating, Aubameyang. He's sort of he's not the same style of player as Cavani, but in the sense that sometimes you might have to give him three or four chances to score a goal until he takes one. Now, that's not a problem because he does get himself in so many good scoring positions that he will get the goal. So I do think it's an interesting dynamic, the two strikers we've got. I'll save the question for later because when we get to the sub, but I will ask about which one you would prefer in a one-on-one situation. We'll get to there. I'll stick with you, Dom, for this, but Danny, you can come in as well afterwards. Right, so their goal. Oh, I really thought we'd stopped conceding goals from corners at the other end of the pitch. You know, when you just thought we just started to move away from it. I know we've conceded a lot of goals this season still, but I just thought things have got better. You know, we've got essentially three, you know, midfielders who are more defensive minded on the pitch. Dom, you can pick on Lichtsteiner and then I'll let Danny finish the rest. What on earth is he doing?
It was a good assist, wasn't it? That's the kind of header that you want your centre forward to make. When, you know, it's your own goal kick to flick it on to somebody running on. So I don't know why Jenkinson's not getting more of a chance if you're going to play a right back like that, because at least he can move, you know, he can run. Yeah, he might make some mistakes as well, but you don't want to see that out of a 34-year-old experienced, you know, player like that. I don't think he has offered a whole lot other than some good banter. I like the dark arts that he's brought in, but in terms of his football, and some of the crosses today were just abysmal. I didn't really think much of his performance today at all. Might be being a bit harsh, but I feel like that's an example of just how much we've missed Hector Bellerin.
Yeah,
but also how good he's been too, because he was getting a lot of stick last season. Poor Hector, and I don't think it was necessarily down to him and his own performances as much as it was the way the team was playing and defending. But again, you know, that same situation, what's the point of having all of these guys in midfield that are supposedly more defensively minded and supposed to be more solid, and you can get undone by a simple ball over the top probably four or five times today? It wasn't a one-off, was it? That's the other, that's the other worrying thing, is that, and again, this goes back to the Mesut Ozil thing. Was he good in the first half? No, he was atrocious today. However, you know, when people sort of lay that claim about him being a liability, well, it didn't change when he came off, the ease at which we got counterattacked. You know what I mean? Like, it, him having this tag of he's a passenger when we don't have the ball, or we're playing with 10 men when we don't have the ball because he doesn't do anything. That's the part that confuses me a little bit, because it makes no difference. We've seen that all season. Whether he's playing or not, we concede the same amount of goals, and the ease at which teams do what they did today is exactly the same. And even if you put three midfielders in there, it doesn't seem to make any difference. So I'm not really sure what the solution is to that. Do you think it's just down to the defenders we had available, Danny, or do you think that there's a system issue, or what?
What, with why we conceded that goal, or just the entire...
Just in general of how easy it is for teams just to run at us constantly.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you, and we were just talking about Lacazette and Aubameyang. You've been a sportsman and played, you've both done sports a lot. If you know week in, week out that you're going to go out there and you're Dennis Bergkamp, you're playing in the 10, that's all you're going to do. Henri, you're going to have the whole of the left-hand side and be the main striker. Or a Vieira, you're just going to be playing in the middle of the pitch, running up and down, doing whatever you want. Lacazette is going, well, am I going to be playing today? Am I not? Aubameyang's thinking, am I going to be up front? Am I going to be behind? Am I going to be to the left or to the right? These sort of things, when a team is starting to gel together, isn't it going to be quite hard for someone to know, to have, if you do the same repetitive thing week after week, game after game, then it's good, you're going to have a better idea and you're going to gel quicker, aren't you? But so many players are, it's like rolling a dice where you're going to play this the next game from game to game. Is that, do you think that's going to affect their form? Because I think it does. But
I think you've hit on something there, Danny, that's kind of interesting. And I mean, I played a different sport. I wasn't playing football, but Aussie rules football. And one thing that was really frustrating to me was when you got asked to change positions multiple times throughout over the few weeks, or even in a game, sometimes you'd get told you've got to go to a different spot. And for me personally, it is really frustrating, because you get used to playing a certain way in a certain system. And then if you keep having to change that all the time, you do feel a little bit lost. Obviously, it's a completely different kettle of fish at the elite level in the Premier League, but I'd be very surprised if, you know, Torreira obviously being asked to play higher up the pitch is a bit foreign to the guy, you know, and all of a sudden he's got to do this role that he's not used to doing, and Xhaka playing at centre-back. I think it goes to show that, you know, these guys are doing the best they can. But I think you're hitting on something there that's probably a pretty big issue, that I don't know what the solution is other than get players back fit.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, that there's, I think there's clearly people in the squad that Emery isn't so keen on, and he would like to bring in some people in certain areas. And once he's done that, I think you will see a slightly more settled team. And also, like, the amount of injuries we've got, particularly in defence at the moment, has just been really, really unlucky. And also partly down to some, you know, poor management of contracts and personnel, the numbers we've got in certain areas. The only other thing I really wanted to say about that goal is, obviously, you know, it's a... They defend the corner, gets into their left-back position. I think it's Proper plays it long. They get two-on-two against Guendouzi and Lichtsteiner. Lichtsteiner, obviously, with a terrible header, which ends up being a flick-on. Guendouzi doesn't react quick enough for me, for Lacazette, who ends up to go on to score the goal. But also, I think Bernd Leno's position at the time. I like the fact he's high up the pitch, and he obviously does that in case we get the ball and we have to recycle it and start again and go all the way back and stuff, and it means that the gaps are smaller. That makes sense. But sometimes there's a time and a place to do it, and I think if you see we've turned the ball over and then there's a long ball there, just get yourself back in position. And he was kind of stuck in no man's land and ended up, you know, committing too early. And it was a good take by Lacazette, you know, it was a good first touch to take it around him and finish. But I think Guendouzi and Leno didn't help out Lichtsteiner there. But yeah, that's obviously on Lichtsteiner, and just to concede from corners. And as Dom said, that I think what Brighton did today really well, they kind of negated that free in the middle. They just ignored it. and basically played over it. Kind of in the way, like I've seen Liverpool do it at the time. Sometimes they're like, okay, we're not going to be able to play through a team. We'll just go long and just hit it down the lines. And they did that a lot. And because we are playing Kolasinac so high up the pitch, Lichtsteiner wasn't getting up as much. Those areas at fullback are really easy to exploit.
I did write something down for the goal, which you asked me about, but I forgot. But 34th minute, we have a corner. The corner misses every single one of our players. The ball ends up at their left back. He runs a little bit and hoofs it with his right foot. Now, if that would have been an Ashley Cole or someone like that who was an accomplished passer from fullback, you'd have thought that's not too bad. But this bloke gets on the outside of his right foot, I think it was, or the inside.
It was the Dutch guy, Davy Proper, I think.
Hoofs the ball half the length, three quarters length up the pitch. And as you were saying, Lichtsteiner gets a glancing head on it, just like Don was saying. If Giroud would have done that, it would have been going, fucking, that's brilliant forward play. And lands at the feet of their forward. He probably goes, well, Christmas was yesterday. What's going on? I've got the ball at my feet. And then, like you were saying, Leno's come out and there's two blokes there. And it's like Moses with the Red Sea, wasn't it? The two defenders parted and Leno went sliding down, landed on the halfway circle. And then that bloke went, well, even Yaya Sanogo wouldn't miss an open goal like that, did he? And he couldn't miss. And you got to be thinking, that combination of every single person in the box not touching the ball, their left back, the person in the left back, launching it all the way down the field, then our defender getting ahead on it, and then it landing right at the foot of their striker. Meanwhile, our bloody goalkeeper's going Bambi on ice on his arse. That's five things that has to happen for that goal to go. Plus getting the shot on target, because many a player has missed from that distance before. Those six things, that's never going to happen. It's probably never happened in the history of football, but it's happened to us. And it will never, ever happen again.
It happens every time you can see, Danny. I've said that heaps of times. Where
not all six things, but quite often,
it's a concession of errors, you know, like consecutively in a row, 1, 2, 3, and that's what usually will end up leading to a goal. Not that often does one error from a player end up costing a goal. Generally, it'll be like what you just explained, and it'd be the same thing for the Brighton fans looking at the first Aubameyang goal.
Yeah,
they made two or three errors in a row that leads to that Aubameyang shot. It's not just the poor play from their defenders to not clear the ball first time, and then they get the ball from Lacazette, and then they don't track Aubameyang's run out to the side, and then they all get narrow, and then he gets a shot. Like, it's every time you concede a goal, you can go back and you can probably point out three or four mistakes, but it's when they happen in a row that generally you'll end up conceding a goal. It's really easy in hindsight to go back and say why we should have not conceded that, but the issue for me is that was the way they were attacking all game and it kept working. But it's not like I haven't seen that before. It just seems like a very familiar script at the moment, where, like, that's what I keep saying with the whole Ozil situation. There was one moment in the first half, I can't remember what minute it was, where a player got into that little right-hand side and they kind of just dinked the ball across from a little attacking play for them. And Ozil didn't track him at all. He was about 4 or 5 yards behind him, kind of just jogging along. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the reason that he got hooked at halftime, because that was really poor. That was really, really poor. It was just, he could see the runner there and he just made no effort whatsoever. And it could have easily resulted in a goal for them. That's the kind of thing, I guess, that other than that, everything else just is bypassed, all of those players. So it doesn't matter if we're trying to press, we're so high up the pitch, they just kick a few long balls up, knowing that we don't have the defenders back there at the moment that are fit and informed to do anything about it. And it just seemed like a very familiar story. And I mean, everyone's in the chat box is worried about the Liverpool game. I actually think we'll be better against Liverpool because they'll try and play football.
Yeah.
And every single time we've played a team this year that's actually trying to play football against us, it's much easier. What we struggle with is when teams do that today, where they sit back and they defend. They let us have the ball. There was so much sideways passing going on. They're just sitting and waiting. And then when we do try and go forwards, they turn it over and then they just all bomb forward and launch long ball counterattacks. That's the way to beat us.
But I was very impressed with Ozil that you were just talking about. I did a wonderful tweet to try and annoy the Ozilistas, and I said, Ozil is so good, he's managed to get 90 minutes of fuck all done in 45 minutes, so they'll take him off.
That's not bad. I'm an Ozil fan, I really am, but
I didn't mean it. I'm just trying to tweet.
No, I know, but it's interesting. I'm an Ozil fan, and yet I'm torn. Like, today was an atrocious game. It was horrible, and I think partly effort is a big part of that today. But secondly, the way that Brighton set up just doesn't suit his skill set. They just gave him no space. They didn't let him get into areas to make these passes. You know, every time he got the ball, he had to pass it sideways or backwards. And that was probably a credit to the way that they nullified that particular attacking threat, because you didn't really see Aubameyang and Lacazette getting into the game that frequently either, because we couldn't get the ball up to them in the first place. So it's a tricky one. It definitely is a bigger issue than just Mesut Ozil, but because he's Mesut Ozil, he's going to be the one that everyone focuses their attention on, obviously. So it's a tricky one. I know that you're not the biggest fan of the guy, John. What do you think is going to happen with him?
I really don't know. Honestly, I think if Emery was in full control of transfers and who's in the squad and everything else, then I think he would be asking the club to look to try and move Mesut on, so he can bring someone in, use his wages, whether it's, I assume it would be for at least two players, you know, or however you want to chop it up and stuff. I just don't think he's his kind of player. You know, there's clearly a difference of opinion between the two of them on what is expected out on the pitch in terms of performance. And honestly, I think if Mkhitaryan was available, then I'm not even sure Ozil would, you know, be getting games. And that's not to say that Ozil was the worst player on the pitch today. I mean, I don't think he did anything. But to be honest, there was a lot of players on the pitch today I don't think did much either. So
it wouldn't have mattered who was playing in that advanced playmaker role, would have come off today, whether it's Ramsey, Maitland-Niles. It could have been any of those, because it's the one.
I'm not sure they would have come off, but he might have changed the system. And I think the problem is Ozil isn't as flexible as other players we've got in the squad.
What we missed today was the overlapping when we have a back three, because Brighton were so comfortable knowing that we weren't going to get players in behind, because they clogged up that area that Mesut Ozil would occupy. And generally, when you do that, then you know that Hector Bellerin or Kolasinac can bomb forward and do the overlaps on those wing areas. And Lichtstein is not going to do that. And because we're playing a back four, I don't think we saw Kolasinac get forward as often and as deep as we normally do. So those are the two areas where I think it became really easy for Brighton, because we didn't have that threat today. And I think that's where you really do see and miss something like a Hector Bellerin and how good he has been, because he's been doing that all season. I remember even in the Chelsea game early on, the one that we should have won, he was the biggest attacking threat for the whole game, just constantly getting into those areas. So it creates that issue that if you want to clog up the midfield areas to not let Mesut Ozil have space and time, it's a smart thing to do, because we know what he can do if he gets time there.
Yeah.
But then you've got the overlapping threat. But when you don't have one and or the other, it becomes a little bit easier to work around.
Yeah, one thing I will say in Ozil's defence is that he didn't have a lot of options when he got the ball. There wasn't a lot of movement. And Kolasinac only got forward a few times. And to be fair, when he did, no one in the team was really finding him with a pass. And Lichtstein, when he got forward, like maybe twice, he did a P-roll across along the floor, which is even I can do better than that at times. He says, sitting, you know, slightly overweight on a computer chair. Anyway, to wrap up the first half, very quickly, I saw a few people on Twitter moaning about this. Montoya tackle on Guendouzi, just miscontrols the ball and then overruns the tackle slightly. Some people call for a red card. Dom, did you think it was a red, or were you
send him off? Because I know you're going to say that it's not even a foul. So I've got to balance this out.
Danny, red, yellow, or?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard. Oh, I remember because Sean's mum was there and she screamed, "Oh, hasn't he got lovely hair?" I said, "He's fucking 19, woman. You're 36. Back in your box." No. Your mum's not 36, is she?
I say, Danny, you've done well for yourself there.
No, she's 42. Bloody hell, I've just taken 6 years off her. So I'm thinking, what? He's not. He's I've just been telling her we've got this wonderful 19-year-old. Next thing you know, she's perving at him. Bloody MILF. That's what she thinks she is. So whether it may be a yellow on it, but he is the one that people go after because it does seem that he's quite easy to wind up.
Yeah.
He'll take it all day long, and you can kick him and he'll keep on running. And but it did. The first quarter, maybe the first half of the first half of the game, he was spraying balls all over the place and doing really well, but then they all started to kick him and pull him down, and that tends to stop his game, which is the whole point of doing it.
Do you think, John, do you think that he's got a little bit of the Wilshires about the way that he runs with the ball, which is why he gets tackled a lot like that?
He holds on for it too long.
Yeah, he just has that little extra sort of few minutes or few moments on the ball, that extra dribble, the extra little try to run past an opponent kind of, you know what I mean? Like, he just seems to have the ball at his feet for a lot longer than, say, a Xhaka does, for example.
There's a couple of times today where, like, we weren't necessarily going anywhere with it, but he's got the ball when he's run from the left-back position to the right-back position to pass it to Maitland-Niles as he came on later in the game. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that because he's not risking the ball or giving up possession or anything, but you can just play a pass into, you know, Socrates. You can then play it onto Maitland-Niles and he gets there quicker. It just speeds the play up. And it's frustrating because you can see some of the passes he does, like the ones he did to Aubameyang today, are really, really good. And they're very cutting passes and he's got some great technique and stuff. But yeah, I think he tends to dwell on the ball a little bit too much and positionally as well. He lacks sort of awareness looking in behind him, and he gets, you know, five yards, 10 yards sort of out of spot sometimes. And if you've got good players on the other team, and Brighton have got some good players. Solly March, I thought, was quite decent for them today, and Lacardi on the other side as well. They can pick the ball up in those little spots and make things happen. So I think it's just an age thing, experience. There is a question mark over whether he'd play this much if we had more options at centre mid, I think.
Well, here's what I was going to ask as well on the centre mid situation, because that's an area for me that I feel is a bit of a problem, not necessarily with how many players we've got, but the quality and the type of player we've got, where if Ozil was to go, are you not a little concerned about the lack of creativity, especially when you start hearing things like Eva Banega coming in? So how many of these types of midfielders does the guy want? I am genuinely a little concerned that we just don't have the creativity on the wings and or in that number 10 role. If Ozil's not playing, who's going to sit there and kind of do the playmaking, I suppose?
I'm not 100% convinced that he necessarily wants an out-and-out number 10 anyway. I think
that's fine.
Yeah, I think he prefers centre mid who can create something, because we know Xhaka can and Torreira can. Banega, he's a good player. I'm not sure he's still got the legs for the Premier League. He was dreadful when he came to Italy, but to be fair, it was in the Milan team in a bit of a mess at the time. He's very experienced. So I'm not necessarily against it, but I think Emery seems to, whenever I watch his teams, they like, you know, the wide players. They're the ones who get the chances to create. The way that sometimes we, and a bit kind of the way like Sarri likes to do it, in that they keep possession, suck the team onto you until you make the space and then bang forwards, explode. It's a bit worrying to me that we've only really got Mkhitaryan and Iwobi, who are the only players who can carry the ball, you know, sort of carry it any distance up the pitch.
Well, this is why it's so strange to me that Ramsey's being let walk out the door.
Again, though, we don't, you know, that's a club decision and not an Emery one. So
it still seems really odd to me that you have a player that seems to tick the boxes of what we need, that's more of a central midfielder but has the attacking threat.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to talk about our centre, like Elneny is very good at passing the ball sideways and running around a lot. Xhaka, like you said, can create, but he's not going to be that guy that gets into those areas and plays the intricate passes or pops up with a goal now and then. And then Torreira is a bit the same. I feel like all we're going to do is lose a Ramsey and or Ozil and try to replace them with something similar. It just seems a little bit odd to me. Like, I know that you're a big fan of Nainggolan. He would have been someone that would suit that three-man midfield, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's buying Nainggolan is why just keep Ramsey then, you know?
That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, it's the same kind of player. The Ramsey thing is down to the club. I think, I don't know, this is just my opinion. So, you know, from everything Emery's ever said about Ramsey, I assume he would have liked to keep the player. But, you know, at the end, there's Raul, Sven, you know, the board and everything. Now it's all being changed around. So it's down to them. They didn't come to agreement. He's moving on. If that changes, great. If it doesn't, then it's something we have to accept. But I think this team and this season is kind of not muddle your way through it, but Emery will do what he can until we get to where a lot's not going to happen this window, I doubt it, but you know, the summer window, and then you can maybe see some bigger changes within the team. There's a few notes and stuff I've got for the second half, but not a lot happened, to be honest, guys. Before I go though into the second half, though, I'm going to do my Jason Davies. Look, thank you very much all for joining us live, all of you that are here live, 162 of you currently. It's very nice because it's Boxing Day. Not everyone celebrates Christmas. You might be a pagan. You might be celebrating winter solstice or whatever. I don't know. Maybe you're, what do they do? Vikings. I don't know. Maybe it's like Thor's birthday or something. It's Aaron Ramsey's birthday.
Solstice. It was, I think, Christmas Eve was the shortest day of the year.
Yeah, it is. That's what it's winter solstice, Danny. That's what I just said.
Some kind of thing.
Fucking hell. That's why Jesus' birthday is on Christmas.
There
you go. Yeah. Oh, look, I'll explain after the show. We're not going into this now. Anyway, look. There's all you people watching. I ain't got enough likes. They're not really for me. They're for Jason. He's too hungover to come on today. He did some terrible things with some Kit Kats. I can't go any further than that. But he really, really needs the likes. So tappy, tappy for the taffy. Because otherwise, you know, he's going to appear and go, oh, where's my Lakeston?
Boy.
So, yeah, you got to get it done. Right, there you go. There's my terrible Welsh accent. Apologies for people listening later.
Before we move on completely to the second half, do you think that Coz was really quite... You could see improvements from the last game already because he was making sliding tackles, he was getting up in the air, things that a couple of games ago that we were criticising him for because he's getting more game time and he's getting match fit, not just physically fit, that there was more to his game than what we thought there was.
He's only playing because we have to.
Oh yeah, I know that.
You know, like in terms of his recovery and his rehab and the way that he's moving and the minutes that he's getting, they're treading a fine line at the moment with Kos, because even today he came off and he was hobbling a little bit. You can see that he's not probably ready to be playing the winter period so many minutes. So it's going to be very interesting what happens against Liverpool. I hope Mustafi's back, which I never thought I'd say.
We can't risk can't risk Kos against Liverpool. Because he has not got the pace, has he? And he one bad tackle, one bad knock or landing.
I don't think the pace was the issue today. I know a lot of people might disagree, but it's
through the middle. You're playing against Glenn Murray, who is not a quick player. He's very physical, but I think you look. I don't mean in the typical way that Arsenal fans would say he's a physical player and that he's dirty or anything else. He's just big and he's strong and he's powerful and he's very clever because of his experience. And I think you saw Socrates really enjoy that kind of battle with him today, because you can see he likes that. Koscielny struggled a little bit more with it. I thought he was better today.
But at some point.
Oh, they kind of both did at each other and they just kind of laughed it off, didn't they? But they're those kind of players. And I don't mind that in a game. I think that's fine if both players are respectful of it and enjoy that kind of football. Then it's fine. You know, they're not actually punching each other in the head or anything like that. I don't think there was anything dirty like...
They haven't got full Davis.
Yeah, it wasn't like the Southampton game where there were some questionable challenges in Burnley and stuff like that. So I thought Kos was better, but again, he still doesn't look fully fit. And I think you can see that when he came off today, he didn't have like a limp or anything, but he was like, you know, he knew he'd been in a game and looked a bit tired. But again, like Dom said, I don't think he wouldn't be playing if we had Mustafi and Holding and everyone available.
I think he's learned you can't take Xhaka out of the DM and play in central midfield and play him there, because that's just you're cutting your nose off to spite your ears or whatever the saying is.
Spite your face, Danny.
That's the one.
We'll talk about the subs. Kos did come off from the Maitland-Niles and we saw a formation change. But before that, we saw Ramsey came on, which I thought was sensible, Dom. I thought it was going to be for either Guendouzi or perhaps Aubameyang, because I thought Aubameyang got a bit quiet in the second half, but it was for Lacazette. We saw him frustrated, throwing his gloves on the ground. I don't know if he's just done that to wind up people now because of the cameras and everything that happened in the last game. It wouldn't surprise me because he's got that kind of character about him. But he did look annoyed again. And I'm not sure subbing him was the right decision.
I remember thinking at the time this didn't make sense to me, purely because we had so much, what would you call, we had a lack of creativity as it was after Ozil coming off, where you know, Lacazette provides you with that really good link-up play. He does drop deep into these little holes to kind of, you know, give a forward option when teams are sort of parking the bus, so to speak. And I don't think Aubameyang does that as much. He's looking to make runs off the shoulder of defenders, which is great. But at that point in the game and the way that Brighton were playing, I don't think that he was going to be the player up front that was going to cause them issues. I think it would have been better to leave Ramsey on and have a bit more interplay, a bit more creativity, and, you know, maybe a Iwobi pops up with a goal, or, you know, other people kind of occupy those forward spaces. But yeah, hindsight's awesome, isn't it? Hindsight's wonderful, but it really didn't help. I don't think that it did a whole lot in terms of changing the game in our favour. In fact, I think that it probably did the opposite.
I was saying, did you think he was trying to match their formation, thinking that would try and make a better game of it, and it didn't work, did it?
Well, no, because, I mean, they were playing 4-5-1, essentially, and we switched. I mean, when Ramsey came on, we were still four at the back at that point.
That's what I meant when Ramsey came on for Lacazette, then you had Aubameyang up front on his own, and we had five in midfield, kind of matching them that way.
Maybe. I thought Brighton stepped it up second half, and we certainly dropped off. And as I said at the start of the show, it was the first time where I've seen us be worse second half in a game. Because generally, it's the other way around, and we kind of got used to it.
That was weird.
I got the sub of bringing Ramsey on. It made sense, the pressure. You saw it straight away, and he forced a Ryan to make a save because he won the ball back high up the pitch, and Aubameyang latched onto it. But I agree with Dom. I think in a game like that where we're not playing as well, you know, Brighton come into it a bit more. I can understand leaving Aubameyang on because maybe Brighton start to push a little bit forward, get overconfident, and gaps do appear. But I just think we just always play better when Lacazette's on the pitch. I just think he's so instrumental in what we do, from closing down to the front. He's interplay with other players. He's got really good awareness. So I said earlier that I had a question for you about those two. We saw the chance earlier where Aubameyang, I think, put it too close to the keeper. And, you know, Ryan made a good save, but I think he made it easier for him, Aubameyang with a shot. Would you rather have, and this is hard to say now, but would you rather have Aubameyang one-on-one with a goalkeeper or Lacazette, Dom?
For me, Lacazette all day. And that would have been before
yeah.
that particular incident too, for yeah. sure.
Danny?
Definitely. Yeah, Lacazette.
Yeah, you just said definitely you weren't going to say a player then.
Having a conversation between the three of us as usual. Would you say that, John?
I think so, yeah. I really like Aubameyang. And look, I'm not taking away from his goal record this season. He's fantastic already. But I do think he needs more chances. I think Lacazette is more clinical. But there you go. But they're two different type of players. I'm not sure I got that sub. We changed the formation. Koscielny came off, as we said. Maitland-Niles comes on. Lichtsteiner then goes into one of the three centre-backs, which for me, I'm not a fan of him on the pitch at all at the moment, but that position definitely doesn't work. And then we move Xhaka into one of the centre-back spots as well. And nothing else really happened. To be fair, Dom, I thought if anyone was going to score a goal, it looked more likely to be Brighton towards the end of the game than it did us. I thought second half they were probably the better team.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think that, like you said at the start of the show, it was a bit of an opposite day for us today, where we started well, didn't capitalise, and then finished really slowly, which hasn't actually been the case for most of the season. But for whatever reason, they definitely finished stronger than we did and did look like it was hanging on for a point, to be honest, which is a little bit disappointing when it's a team like Brighton. But this is that. I think the frustrating thing is that, you know, when you see the league table at the moment, you saw Chelsea kind of have a bit of a stutter last weekend, and it really is time for us to try. And if we're going to be serious about making top four, those are the types of games that you really can't afford a draw. I know it sounds silly, but we've got Liverpool coming up, and even if we get a draw or a loss from that game, you're talking 2 points from the two games. It would have been better to win today and lose to Liverpool, and you'd still be a point better off. So knowing how many games we've got coming up and where we're at, it's just a frustrating one to play like we did today and still sort of get a draw. It's much easier to stomach if you have that dominance and you created a lot of chances, but, you know, you might hit the crossbar a couple of times, a couple of unlucky decisions. Yeah, you walk away with a draw. It happens to even the best teams. But when you play like we did today and then you make the substitutions that we did, I think Emery's going to have a little bit of a. It's probably one of the first games that I've sort of seen us play where I've got a few questions for the manager that I don't think he had a very good day. Put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, Danny, there's not a lot to talk about in the second half, really, to be honest. Solly March got through against Leno and put it over the bar with a chip that you probably could have done better for Brighton. And they basically just kept hitting us on the counter with, in particular, Lacardia. I thought Lacardia was really good for them today. And the game kind of fizzled out and it got to the last 5 minutes. And Chris Hughton, I think, probably much to the annoyance of the Brighton fans, was happy just to slow the team down and say, look, we'll take a point. It's Arsenal. If you gave it that before the game, we'll be happy with it. So 1 point today, one all. The game wasn't the greatest. It felt kind of typical of games this time of year in that you either get an absolute blind or you kind of get a stinker because players are so tired and they're playing so many games. And it's not helped by all our injuries. So if in the chat box you have any questions, we've already got a few lined up, but please feel free to fire away.
26 goals today in the Premier League so far. No, 28 so far. With
28. Is Watford Chelsea still one all?
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah. So, yeah. But I do agree with you, Dom, that just before we get some questions from the listeners, dropping points today, it's not the worst thing in the world because during this period, you're always going to drop points because there are so many games. But when you see, you know, City lost and they both lost in the last round of fixtures as well. Spurs have decided to start playing football, which is disgusting. And Liverpool are far too far many points clear in the league now for my liking at all. Hopefully they all collectively Stevie G and fall over flat on their face because we can't have Liverpool winning the league. Oh, could you imagine Twitter?
6 points clear already. Wow.
Yeah, it's not good. It's just frustrating because it's ground we could have made up, either overtake Chelsea or make ground back up on City. And I'm not saying that we go on to them, finish above them, but making the gap smaller and everything, just it feels a bit better and more secure. And especially now with United, look, I'm not saying Solskjaer's a great manager, but they've got very good players there and they should have been playing much better than they are. You keep dropping points and United start creeping back up on us. It's not comfortable viewing. So there we go. Right, so we've got some questions. Danny, can you grab any questions that appear, please?
Yeah.
So first question is for you, Dom, from Jamie Johnston. Should we bring back Chambers in January? Doing well at centre-back for Fulham at the minute and considering our defensive problems could do a job for us.
I don't think we're allowed to with the new rules, are we?
I honestly don't know. I think it depends on the loan agreement. But yeah, I'm really not sure.
I thought the Premier League put a stop to doing that in the first. The same thing with the Reece Nelson situation, I'm pretty sure.
I know Reece Nelson, we definitely can't. He's there for a year. Yeah.
Anyway, I think we need a new centre-back. I think we need to buy someone, you know, I don't know, hopefully Sven's out there searching around, looking around the place, someone that's got, you know, 4, 5, 6 seasons left in them, not necessarily a really young player. I think we need a little bit more of a quick fix. If you look at the back line at the moment, we've got Koscielny and Lichtsteiner, who are well on their way to the ends of their careers. And then Mustafi's only a young guy still. And then Sokratis is 30, I'm pretty sure. So we probably need something more around that 25, 26 that's just starting to come into the peak of their career that hopefully can come in and do something straight away, because we've got some good young players back there. It's just they're all injured at the moment. So, yeah, we definitely, I think, need a buy. I'm not sure that Chambers is going to do a whole lot for us.
No. And for anyone who's given Chambers some stick for the start of the season, go and watch Fulham last year from the Championship. They conceded tons of goals. It's just the way they play, and they've carried it on. I don't think they've had the same defence they might have done now since they've got new management, but up until that point, they changed their back line and formation and shape every single game. He's actually played DM quite a lot since... who's taken over at Fulham, Danny? What's his name?
Ranieri,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's played DM a couple of times and done quite well, apparently.
Ranieri's played DM. He'd probably do a better job than the defenders.
Callum Chambers. But yeah, I'm sure Ranieri could do a job at DM, probably even still now.
Yeah.
Marquise Hodges asked Danny, why the hell is Xhaka taking corners when Ozil is on the pitch? Like him or hate him, but Ozil can certainly deliver a corner. This is a good point, this, because I mean, the goal we conceded from, we only had two back on the halfway line, which I don't think is a problem, because I think only Brighton probably only had one player up or maybe on the edge of their box.
Ben Murray, and he didn't have his horse.
Yeah. So why do you think it is Xhaka taking the corners and not Ozil?
You would think that there would be quite a few people. I mean, that corner should have been taken by a right-footed person, and Xhaka a left-footed person?
Yes.
So you don't really want to be taking, because you're not going to do an in-swinger, out you? I mean, an out-swing. You want to do it an in-swing, which is probably why it missed everyone. You would think that logically you'll say to Xhaka, you cover the halfway line, one of the forward players will get up there. Ozil's not known for his getting stuck in when it comes to a corner, so you go and drift the ball in. Why did he do it? Absolutely no idea. So maybe it's not. They couldn't have come to any kind of agreement on his bonus if it was anything come from the corner, or he couldn't be bothered, or it's too cold.
We keep conceding from corners anyway, so maybe we should just
give them
not
the ball.
Take them. Come with it. Refuse. We'll just refuse. Next time we get a corner, we'll be like, nope.
Thank you.
It is slightly odd, because I think some of the set pieces we've done this season have actually been really good, and they're different to the old style where we would either just play it short and try and draw the team out again because we didn't like crossing it because no one had the ball, or just firing it into no one. We've had a few kind of routines and stuff. I do get the question. I understand when it's... if it's a certain side of the pitch and it suits a right-footed player better, if Ozil's not taking it, that makes sense to me, because we've seen that sometimes where Torreira's taking them. I don't know. It's a good question, though. Right, got a couple more here. Loki73. Here you go, Dom. You can have this. I'm not going to call you a fanboy because you're not a fanboy. But you're Ozil's defender today. Ozil can't play away at Brighton, Southampton, Spurs, Liverpool, Man U, away, blah, 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 blah. Should we just save him for Notts County at home when we are 3-0 up?
Well, it sounds like it. If you're talking to Emery, it does seem like, for whatever reason, after the World Cup, he obviously had his struggles there, and the media, I think, definitely were very harsh on Ozil in terms of the whole German situation, but that's neither here nor there. But it sounded like, you know, then Emery was very much on the side of the fence, which was, you know, we're going to create a family environment for him. We're going to do what we can to support him. We're going to do everything we can. And then now it seems like there's been a definite change in the way that he views Ozil in the team, where today, especially, you know, I thought maybe he would come out after the game and say that, oh, no, I had to take him off because he had the back strain was giving him grief or something. Like, that's what I expected, to be honest. So even I'm sat here a little bit confused now after, like you said, being more of an Ozil defender than I am criticising the guy. But it was very, very interesting to hear him say, no, it was tactical. I had to take him off for X, Y, and Z. And you look at that and think, well, you know, an Arsene Wenger would have kept him on and changed other things around Mesut Ozil. And I'm not saying that that's the right way to go. I'm not saying it's the wrong way to go. I'm just saying there's definitely a very big shift in the way that Emery is viewing Ozil, and not being part of an absolute first 11 that he's willing to change his team around. It's almost like, if I need to change something, he's the first person that he looks at changing. So I think
that's the way he talks about him, isn't it? The fact, like you said, it's so easy for him to just say, oh, he's back. He had a back spasm again. It's played up. And that's why he wasn't quite full fitness. But we wanted to, like, he had it in the warm up before the game.
That's
so
right.
We wanted to give him a run
or
out.
Flared up in the first half. And he just,
that's an easy thing to throw out that you can do. You protect a player. But
He's really not trying very hard to protect Mesut Ozil. That's been the interesting thing. And I'm not saying that's a right or wrong thing. I'm just sort of pointing out as an observation that, you know, I guarantee Arsene Wenger would have made an excuse for him and had a quiet word with him on the side and sort of, you know, done the managing part behind closed doors. But it seems that he's very okay with coming out in the media and not necessarily doing a Mourinho and throwing Ozil under the bus.
No.
I don't think there's anything wrong with what he's doing, but it is interesting that he's not fluffing around, isn't it, in terms of answering the questions. He's just saying, yep, tactical, had to change X, Y, and Z against Spurs. Yeah, that was tactical. Couldn't play him in that game. So if that's the case, and like I said, I'm an Ozil fan, but if you're going to have a player like that, that you don't have plans to play or to build a team around or to really kind of, you know, work within that capacity, then it's a bit of a waste, I feel, you know. And I feel like But again, the concern is that I don't think Mkhitaryan is good enough to take up that role and do it consistently. I know Iwobi's not. Aaron Ramsey seems like he's on the way out. So I think that there's a lot of issues. Everyone talks about defensively how we've got all these defensive problems, and quite clearly we do. I'm also a little bit concerned up forward with where the creativity is going to come from. And that's also a big concern for me going forward too. So it's definitely going to take a few transfer windows to sort out that.
Right. Okay. A few more questions, and then we're going to wrap this up, because I'm sure everyone gets bored of listening to us, especially on Christmas. You've got wonderful family to spend time with. Hey, isn't that great? Another quick comment from Loki73. If we pay Ozil double, 700 grand a week, will he work twice as hard? You never know. Maybe he will. FlyKJ, who do you think we'll buy in the January transfer window? Someone else also asked a question relating to January. Do you think we have any players lined up by Sven? I have no idea. I'm sure Dom and Danny are probably the same.
I don't
know if he's got anyone lined up.
Hopefully not Banega. That'd be very underwhelming.
The one we have been linked to is Nicolas Pepe, I think.
From the
Farmers League. Chris has reliably informed me that he's quite good, although I'm sure he told me a while ago he wasn't. But there you go. He's very good at growing potatoes. No, I'm joking. Apparently, he's a very good player, although Chris thinks he's overpriced at the sort of money that they're going to be asking for him.
So well, who knows? Everyone's overpriced now, though. Yeah. That's the problem.
Especially if you play in January, you know, clubs know we're looking for players as well.
He's an offensive signing as well. I think the issue is that we haven't really heard too much about any links with centre-backs or defenders, have we? Yeah. Which is a little bit of a worry.
Yeah, I would hope that a centre-back comes in. There was a link to a centre-half from Spain, whose name I can't remember. But, no, that's racist. See, look, you've absolutely killed me there, Danny. I've done it to myself.
That's not right.
Yeah, I don't know what his name is. I can't remember. Who's anyway. Oh, I don't know. Someone in Spain. But he's very young. He was only 20, 21. And I spoke to Joel, formerly of the Football Hipsters, rest in peace, that podcast. Barcelona fan, he watches a lot of La Liga. And he said, it's a huge step up for whoever this guy is. He said he thinks he's got a bright future, but he didn't strike me as the sort of player. Oh, Caldeiro. There we go. Josh Gunner. That's it. Not John Terry. No. But yeah, Caldeiro, I'm pretty sure that's a centre back. But it didn't strike me as the sort of signing that we'd be going for, because he's a development one for the future. Not necessarily one for the future. He's already playing, but he's not established, like Dom said, you know, like 25 years old, 26.
We need someone that's at least rated sort of 84 or 85 on Foot Champs.
You've got to pay 60 million like Van Dijk for that, and we just can't afford that. There's no way that's happening. Right, a few more questions.
But what about anyone that's got an inform?
I don't even have it anymore. I haven't bought it for 3 years.
Danny would know.
Yeah, Danny would know.
I haven't got the new FIFA. I refuse to pay for it unless it's 10 quid or less.
Yeah. Don't forget, people, I will take any extra questions if they are specifically for Rudolph, who will answer in a Northern accent.
You bastards.
Guna73, do you think Emery is managing what he's got available well or not? Very quick, Dom. Go on.
Yeah, yes and no. That's a tough one. I think defensively, it's kind of a bit of a shit show back there. Yeah. I think offensively, no, I really don't. I don't think he's got that front line sorted at all, which is what we've been talking about. Lacazette on, off, Aubameyang starting, not starting. You know, Ozil, yes, no, whatever's going on up there. Doesn't seem to be clicking very well.
Guys, look, I'm 42 likes. What is this? 42? You can't even get me to 50.
It's Christmas, you miserable bastards.
Yeah. Look, there's a special giveaway. It's not today. I'll add that very quickly.
You never know if they pull their fingers out.
But if you get the likes up and you get the views up, there's a very special giveaway. You might be getting a signed shirt. And I'm not talking about a signed shirt by, you know, like
if Sonogo. We haven't done it.
Yeah. It's not us who signed it. It's not Sonogo.
I was going to say, is it us? Is it a bird cap? I'm going to sign something.
Yeah, it's a pirate shirt. No.
Worth nothing. It's a very pay the postage as well.
Yeah, it's a very cool shirt. I will say it now. When we get to 1 million views, we are giving away a framed, signed Santi Cazorla shirt.
Woo!
So if that's not worth some likes, I don't know what it is. We're currently at, what are we at? 983,453 views. So we're not far off. So a couple of shows. So maybe around New Year's or just after New Year's, we'll be giving that away. But don't worry, we'll spread it across all our social media platforms and on the radio show and podcast proper and stuff, and tell you how you can enter.
Say that on iTunes we're well over 2 million. On SoundCloud we're about 1.3 million. It's just you suckers on YouTube are letting us down.
Yeah.
And we will post it anywhere in the world, but it won't be framed if it's outside the UK, because Gav from SheWall is giving it to us, and you might have to, if it's somewhere like next, if it's like Australia, we'll have to give it to Dom and he can drop it off next time he goes home.
I'll drop it off, all right. I'm sure I'll make it. It'll make it to where it needs to get.
Yeah.
Right. A couple more questions and then we will wrap up so everyone can go back to enjoying family. That's why Dom's in Canada. No, I'm joking. He probably gets on farm with his family. It's just me and Danny hate people.
Yeah.
Josh Gunner forever. Is Mavropanos dead? Is he back in training, Danny? I think.
Yeah, a couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah. I'm not sure he's the solution to our problems, but, you know, it's another body. Joe Madeira, question to all three of you: is Iwobi good enough to be at Arsenal?
Ooh. Yes, no, depending on the weather and the formation.
I think Europa League Arsenal. Yep, he's.
I think that's the thing. You've got to be a consistent performer, which is the criticism Ozil's getting. That you know what he can do on his good days, but you don't get it often enough. I think the similar story with Iwobi, where on his good days, he's quite brilliant and can be a match winner. And then on other days, which are a little bit too common, he doesn't really do a whole lot.
Yeah. I know it seems strange just because of his age. I wouldn't be against, if we had the personnel to cover it, and maybe it's something for next season, maybe he had a loan somewhere.
But he's had 120-odd games for Arsenal's first team. You'd have thought his progression would have been a little bit more, considering when he came into the team.
Players have gone on loan for 2 years to other clubs in Europe. I know it's very strange here in the Premier League. It's not the done thing, so to speak. But on mainland Europe, that's happened at bigger clubs where players have gone on loan for a year or two and then come back.
Did that, didn't he? Went on loan to AC Milan for 2 years the minute they signed him.
Yeah, you know. So it's something maybe that we should look at as an option. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Last question. I'm going to give it to. It's not the last question. It's second to last question. Sorry, Alonso Spencer. What is your guys' preferred back four or three against Liverpool? And also, should we start with our most talented 11? I don't know what our most talented 11 is, so I haven't got a clue. So goalkeeper. I assume we're all going Leno.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Hector isn't available. So okay, are you going back three or back four?
Depends who's fit. That's the issue back there. I'd go back three if Monreal, Socrates, and who's the other one?
Mustafi.
If they're all fit and able to play 90 minutes, that's the back three I'd go with. And I don't think Bellerin's going to be fit enough to play that game. I'd probably put Maitland-Niles on that right-hand side. I think Lichtsteiner would just be a complete disaster against Liverpool.
Yeah. I think I agree with Dom. Yeah, I'd probably play that. I prefer a back four generally, but I think I'd go with those three if they're all available, and then playing the wing backs, Maitland-Niles over Lichtsteiner. Danny, any different?
Well, you know, Liverpool are going to come and they're going to be attacking and they're going to have their three up front. And so whoever's going to play in defence for us is going to get a roasting. So I think we should try and do what everyone did to Arsenal over the years, try and batter them into submission. So I'd go Socrates, Mustafi, and who's the other centre-back? I forgot this. The only other one that could be fit.
Koscielny?
No, God, he'll get injured the first tackle he goes
Monreal.
In. I think Monreal's done for, injury after injury constantly. That's making me sad. That's a whole show on its own. We're going to have to play three at the back. So, whichever defenders are fit. But we're not going to know which ones are fit and which ones aren't fit, are we? Until maybe even half-time at the game, we might not know. It's going to be really hard because there's going to be goals in that game. And unless we are defensively solid and rock hard and we're going to go in their feet first, we could be in for a bit of a trouncing.
So, I mean, if Monreal isn't available, then I suppose you can play Socrates, Koscielny, Mustafi. But then if one of them's not available, I've got no idea what you do.
As long as you make sure that Xhaka and Torreira are playing in front of them, then that's at least something.
Yeah, that's the one thing I would say. I don't want to see Xhaka in the defence. No, I don't think he's been bad there. I think today he got caught out a few times when he moved there, but he's not a centre-back, so you know I'm not going to blame him for that because he doesn't know the position.
How quickly people are on Xhaka's back once he moved him out of his best position. Oh, he's shit again.
Yeah. I don't know. It's that side of things is a little frustrating because these, like you touched on it earlier, Danny, and I think it's a really good point that so many of these guys are having to chop and change not just week to week, but in game. And that's really difficult. Doesn't matter that you're a professional, you know, you're asking Xhaka to all of a sudden play center back and then a midfield and then deepest midfielder and then forward, and a bit of a disaster back there at the moment.
Someone, if they have the time, should go for all of our Premier League formations and see who's played in the most number of positions, because it's going to be someone like Xhaka, isn't it? He's covered nearly every single one.
Yeah, he is our actual Swiss Army knife.
Dang,
your idea. That's time to shut this off.
Right, last question then from Ant235. Question, does Rudolf need a safe space being that close to Danny's head? Rudolf, do you need a safe space?
He keeps me in a shoebox, the bastard.
There you go. That's a perfect way to end the show. So it just gives me time to say thank you to the chat box, as always, amazing. Thank you to everyone who's donated. Again, you guys are brilliant. You always keep us going. Never needed, but always appreciated. Thank you for Dom for coming on today, mate. Cheers.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to everyone.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you. And thank you to Danny for coming on and being all glittery and sparkly for us. Again, guys, if you aren't watching the show, please do come on and check out Danny.
There she is, sitting there wearing an ABW branded t-shirt.
And there's Sean.
Fresh coating of fake tan. There you go, people. But only if you're good, Jason might give one away on the next show.
Yeah. So there you go. So be sure to join us on the next show, which should be me, Danny, and Jason, I think, for Liverpool. Yes,
that's it.
I think that's it. I don't know. Look,
I might have my name down for that one as well. But
yeah, I think you might be down for that one. I'm not sure, mate.
That's what I read it in the group, and that's what Jason's put. So that is law.
Yeah. So expect me to moan at Jason and try and get a day off because I haven't had one over Christmas. It's terrible. Notice he's not here, eh?
Hey,
organising the lineups.
No,
yeah. Tappy tappy for Tappy.
He's in the pub. He sent a picture of the pint he's drinking.
Oh, it's disgraceful. Anyway, come on, Danny. Switch the shit off. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Oh, ho, ho, you bastards.